Radio Prague News. Finance Minister Eduard Janota is meeting with party leaders in an effort to win support for his austerity package for 2010. Defence Minister Martin Bardak is holding talks with US officials on new areas of cooperation after Washington abandoned plans to build a radar base in the Czech Republic. And the Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico has warned Prague it is undermining its position in the European Union by delaying the ratification of the Lisbon Treaty. Finance Minister Eduard Janota is meeting with party leaders in an effort to win support for an austerity package that would reduce the 2010 deficit to 170 billion crowns, that is 5% of the GDP. Following a meeting with representatives of the Civic Democratic Party on Thursday, Mr. Janota said he was willing to drop limits on building savings and raise VAT rates by only 1% instead of 2%. His meeting with the Social Democrats on Friday is expected to be crucial in paving the way to a compromise agreement. Failure to agree on the 2010 budget could lead to the fall of Prime Minister Jan Fischer's caretaker government. Defence Minister Martin Bardak is holding talks with US officials on new areas of cooperation after Washington abandoned plans to build a radar base in the Czech Republic. Minister Bardak is expected to meet with his US counterpart Robert Gates later today to discuss the implications of the change of plan and the possibility of maintaining agreed-on science and research projects. Czech Foreign Minister Jan Kohout on Thursday also emphasized the country's interest in cooperating closely in some other sphere of activity, for instance, space research. At a press briefing in Brussels on Thursday night, Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico warned Prague it was undermining its position in the European Union by delaying the ratification of the Lisbon Treaty. Following a summit of EU leaders on Thursday, Mr. Fico said he had heard a number of very strong statements on the subject by prime ministers of leading EU member states. The Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer later confirmed that there was increasing concern in Brussels on the subject and that EU leaders were now more worried about the Eurosceptic Czech president signing the treaty than they were about the outcome of the Irish referendum. The Lisbon Treaty has been ratified by both houses of the Czech Parliament, but President Václav Klaus has made it clear he will delay signing it for as long as possible. A group of Civic Democrat senators are planning to once again challenge the treaty in court. An opinion poll conducted by the Factum Invenio agency in the beginning of September suggests that the Social Democrats would now win general elections with 32.6% of the vote, followed by the right-wing Civic Democrats with 27.2%. The Communist Party would get 13.8% of the vote, while the newly formed Top 09 would get 11.9%. No other party would gain enough to cross the 5% threshold needed to win seats in the lower house. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days are expected to be partly cloudy with intervals of rain and shine and day temperatures around 23 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, we look at the implications for Central European security after the United States pulls the plug on missile defence in Poland and the Czech Republic, and also ask ordinary people what they think. You've heard of Crazy Golf, but have you tried Extreme Golf? We find out about the people who are taking the game back to its roots.
The only difficulty really is to find the ball when you hit it too far. So if you miss the fairway, if you miss the ski slope, it's gone.
We'll have a roundup of all the latest business news and also a look at the World Press Photo Exhibition in the centre of Prague. That's all coming up in the next few minutes. Stay tuned. The The Czech Republic and Poland were the centre of world attention on Thursday when the United States announced it was abandoning plans to place parts of its missile defence shield in the two countries, specifically a interceptor base in Poland linked to a radar base here in the Czech Republic. Reaction in Prague has been mixed. Some have welcomed Washington's decision, though the Czech political leaders who backed the project in the face of public opposition say they are greatly disappointed. But how are ordinary Czechs taking the news? Rosie Johnston has been finding out on the streets of Prague.
I think it's not so good.
Why?
I support the radar. Because I prefer Americans to Russia. So I think other people are quite afraid of American. I don't know why, because I'd rather be a part of like American Union of Europe than Europe. Sorry, European Union.
Já myslím, že to dobrá není věc, že
I think this is not a good thing because the Americans are giving in to the Russians, and I think that is a bad move. This is a victory for Russia and for Paroubek.
Well, I'm quite happy because this project is a project exclusively made by the United States. I think it would be better to have a radar made by NATO, by the whole organization, not just by United States.
So you don't think this is like a victory for Russia, as some people are maybe saying it is?
No, I think not.
Mně to je v podstatě jedno, protože si myslím, že ať už tady...
I don't mind, because I think that whether the radar is here or not, it doesn't matter much to the Czech Republic. I think that these contracts, which were supposed to boost the Czech economy, weren't actually all that lucrative. But on the other hand, I didn't worry about all that talk of a security risk, because there are such bases all over Europe, and no one has had security problems with them.
Žádný vážnější problém s tím nikdo nemá.
I think it would be good if the radar would be in Czech Republic.
Why? Because of Russia?
Yes, and it can defend us.
Some reaction there to the news that the United States is not going to build a radar base in central Bohemia. So what about the political implications of Washington's new approach to missile defence, which has dashed Czech and Polish hopes of a special relationship with their American allies? Will the overhaul of America's defence strategy lead to a rethink of Czech security policy? And should Central and Eastern European states fear a rise in Russia's influence in the region? Jan Richter reports.
Some believe the US overhaul of its anti-missile defense strategy is a step in the right direction. Others fear it will fuel Russian ambitions in the region. A major rethink of the US anti-missile defense shield in Europe means the Czech Republic will not be hosting an American radar base that was to be part of the system aimed at curbing potential missile threat from Iran and other unstable states. Czech Deputy Foreign Minister Tomáš Pojar says the decision will have no immediate impact, but things could get more complicated in the long run.
It has not have any immediate effect, but we will see how the architecture of missile defense, now reconfigured into a slightly modified system, then how it will be developed and how really European space, NATO Europe space, including then the space of Czech Republic, will be protected. So we will see. I think there is a chance that there will not be a decrease of security. Rather, it could be an increase, but it will not be so easy.
Russia has applauded Mr. Obama's move as a correct and brave decision. The new NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen also welcomed the shift. This makes the Czech and Polish government's support for the missile defense project stand out as isolated. But Mr. Pojar says that Czechs have always wanted the project to be integrated within NATO defense system.
If you look, and I'm not now talking about the Russian reaction, but if you look, for example, to the reaction of NATO General Secretary, then it was a little bit spinned because he welcomed that it will be more deeply rooted in the NATO system. That's what we have been pushing all the time, that there must be a clear linkage and clear root of that system in NATO. So that goes with what we have been proposing for the last couple of years.
For its part, Moscow said it wouldn't position its missiles in Kaliningrad, which Russian officials had threatened to do in response to the anti-missile installations in Poland and the Czech Republic. But Czech supporters of missile defense fear that the decision will still lead to a stronger influence of Russia in the former Eastern Bloc. Mr. Pojar says he hopes that no such thing will happen.
Well, I hope that the influence of the United States will not decrease. That is basically my hope. I think it naturally does not have to decrease, but there is no guarantee that the influence of U.S. in this part of Europe will stay as it has been. I think for us it is important that there is American presence, and I don't mean in only purely in the sense of presence of American troops, but the real American presence on European soil, including on the Central European soil. And I hope that the U.S. Will not be departing this part of Europe.
According to analyst Jiří Schneider from the Prague Security Studies Institute, whether or not Moscow's influence over its former vassals grows in the future depends on these countries themselves.
It depends on Central and Eastern Europe. I mean, we remain the members of important organizations like European Union and NATO, and it's completely up to us whether our, I would say, commitments and what the membership in these organizations brings to us, the benefits of these, could be materialized, and this doesn't rely on deployment of one element of missile defense, believe me.
The issue of hosting an American radar base was a controversial one in the Czech Republic. Around 70% of Czechs opposed the project. Mr. Schneider says that the lack of consensus among politicians could also complicate things for the future.
Reality. And of course, I mean, the lack of consensus on this was one of the elements which actually could be used in Washington in favor of some flexible solutions which do not rely on exclusive and sometimes difficult negotiations with hosting countries.
The United States said a new and more efficient anti-missile system should replace the original project put forward by the Bush administration. It should involve NATO countries in a much broader context, and Deputy Foreign Minister Tomáš Pojar says that's what Czechs should focus on.
Well, I think that the debate in Czech Republic will have to be about protection of its space. Nevertheless, I think that it was the case even before this decision, because there are some systems which are going out of their lifetime, and we will have to be replacing them. So it is for a deep debate internally how exactly we will be protecting us and how that will be fit into the overall NATO framework.
The Czech Republic is cooperating with the United States on several other military projects, and on Thursday, Czech Foreign Minister Jan Kohout added a few new ideas. The U.S. could send a Czech scientist to space on an American space shuttle. The U.S. has not commented on the proposal yet, but one thing is certain. It will definitely cause much less consternation in Russia than an American radar base in central Bohemia.
Jan Richter reporting there on what could turn out to be a groundbreaking day for America and its relationship with its European allies. So what do you think? Should President Obama have abandoned European missile defence, or has he made a grave strategic error? Write and tell us, english@radio.cz. Now, 4 years ago, three friends, among them the well-known Czech golf pro Alan Babický, had the idea of bringing extreme golf to the Czech Republic. Extreme golf, as the name implies, isn't played on traditional greens, but on truly rough terrain, in this case, mowed trails at the Spindler of Mlín ski resort. The rules are fairly straightforward. Players have three clubs and play 12 holes, though they aren't actual holes, but circles drawn on the ground. Jan Wellinger caught up with Alan Babický ahead of this year's tournament, which takes place on Saturday, to learn more.
I was translating a book called Extreme Golf, which was describing the history of the sport worldwide, plus some extreme places to play golf. And we had an idea that we could organize one type of a tournament in the Czech Republic, because there's a good history of skiing and lots of ski resorts. And so the mountain type of extreme golf was the way to go. And we organized the first one in Spindlerův Mlín, and it was pretty good success. We had about 60 players, which came out of nowhere, basically, because most of the people didn't understand what it was all about. So they brought all the bags and all the typical golf clothing and everything. And extreme golf is different. You need only three clubs and preferably trekking clothes and everything. So it's adjusted rules from the ordinary golf.
Is it fair to say that it's golf going back to its historic roots, playing in this way?
Absolutely. That's a great question which summarizes it all, because the original golf, as we know it,
400, 500 years ago was played on a normal terrain which was not designed to be played golf at. But, you know, evolutionary changes were that some creative people came with creating golf courses, designing them to a strategic or some other rules of golf. But this is that you take your golf ball and your golf club and you play in the nature as it was designed. So even though it sounds like extreme and like something modern and something in fashion or whatever, it's basically going really back to the roots of the sport as such. We don't have the hole, which is replaced by a circle, which is colored on the grass. So if you're inside of the circle, you're in the hole.
Playing on this type of course, this kind of improvised course, is it likely to throw even the seasoned player, say like yourself, for a loop?
It's not as difficult as it sounds. The only difficulty really is to find the ball when you hit it too far. So basically, there is no space or there is no strategic need to play 250-yard shot because you will not be able to see where it lands because it's usually around the corner of the ski slope, one. And two, that shot would go 100 yards longer. If you miss the fairway, if you miss the ski slope, there's no way to play it from the bushes and trees. It's gone.
Yeah, sounds par for the course to me. Extreme golfer Alan Babitsky speaking there to Jan Vellinger. It's time for our regular roundup of all the latest business news, and for that we're joined by Chris Johnston.
The Czech budget for next year elbowed its way back to the top of the economic and political agenda this week after the abandonment of early autumn elections. Caretaker Prime Minister Jan Fischer has said he will only continue in office for longer if politicians approve a 2010 budget with a deficit of under 170 billion crowns. Politicians cold-shouldered a tax-raising and cost-cutting package tabled by Finance Minister Eduard Janota before the summer, which sought just that. The centre-right Civic Democrats did not like tax-raising proposals, and the left-wing Social Democrats objected to cuts in social spending and hikes in sales tax. But faced with the possibility of even greater chaos if Prime Minister Fischer resigns, there are now signs of compromise all round.
The recent political turmoil has done nothing to weaken the robust Czech currency. The crown actually climbed this week to a 10-month high and at one point pushed the euro to below 25 crowns. Analysts say one of the reasons is the still relatively high interest rates compared with the near zero levels of some West European countries. Another reason is the expectation of a big buy order for crowns following the announcement that the South Korean conglomerate Doosan is going to buy the Czech turbine maker Škoda Power for around 450 million euros.
The strong crown will do little to help struggling state-controlled carrier Czech Airlines. The government this week brought in new management to pilot the airline faced with record losses, a sharp drop in revenues, and no cash reserves to help it cope. A large part of the new team was involved in the cost-cutting restructuring of Czech steel companies. New supervisory board chairman Václav Novák has warned that cuts in labour costs are unavoidable to keep the company going. The airline this week began to lay off several dozen of its around 4,500 staff, but a deal on much deeper cuts will be needed with the unions.
The Czech Republic is no longer a paradise for international coffee bar operator Coffee Heaven. The Central European Coffee House specialist complains in its latest annual results that it was badly hit by a slump in demand from Czechs and fall-off in thirsty tourists visiting Prague. The Czech Republic is the group's second most important market after Poland. Coffee Heaven now says it will concentrate on developing sales in Poland and Hungary.
And the postponement of October's elections is good news at least for hard-pressed advertising firms and media consultancies helping the political parties with their campaigns. Such companies have been amongst the biggest casualties of the financial crisis. Parties have already begun spending part of their estimated half-billion crown budget on their campaigns and will not be able to cancel all of the poster space and ad campaigns already booked. Some ad sector experts now expect the parties will have to find around a third as much money again to payroll a new general election campaign next summer.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Now, in the last part of our show today, this week's edition of The Arts, Jan Wellinger visits the World Press Photo exhibition that's just got underway here in Prague.
The prestigious World Press Photo 2008 has opened at its traditional venue, Charles University's Karolinum in the Prague city center, with winning photos highlighting major events from last year, from the election of U.S. President Barack Obama to scenes of conflict, such as the war between Russia and Georgia. This year, the jury chose some 60 winners from 96,000 entries. Femke van der Valk is a representative of the World Press Photo Foundation. She told me more about World Press Photo's history in Prague.
The exhibition has been traveling to Prague for a long time. It started in 1990, and we've been in the Karolinum for the past 9 years. We always have a local partner that is organizing the exhibition and that looks for a suitable venue. And we really try to stimulate that it's in a good accessible place, so preferably city center, that it's a place that people know. And, of course, it needs to be big enough to host the panels. But I think a place like this, it's known, and the fact that there's a university nearby with many young students, I hope, visiting as well, I think it's a perfect place to show the exhibition.
This year saw a record amount of entries, and Femke van der Valk admits choosing winning photos by the jury was a monumental task.
With the number increasing, it's getting even harder, and well, we've adjusted the program a bit. They had one extra day to take a look at the images, but the jury is divided in a first round and a second round, and the first round jury, they see everything. And as you can imagine, it goes very fast, and they just vote in when they think it's interesting. So there doesn't have to be a minimum number of votes, but if one of the jury members thinks, hey, this might be interesting, and they keep most of the times about 20% is left for the second round jury, but it's still almost 20,000 images, so enough to choose from.
Basically, it has to be really something unusual, striking to me, yeah, able to make it through.
Exactly. It has to be visually tempting in a way, and the people in the jury are experts. They do, it's their work to look at images every day, and so they can tell, of course, just by a second, if they know, hey, this might be interesting, or let's keep it in.
Themes at the fore of the World Press Photo, which is traveling around the globe in 15 copies, include the world record set by Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt at the Olympics, but also scenes of strife, attacks by Brazilian police on squatters, or the 2008 earthquake in China. The overall contest winner was a photo by American photographer Anthony Sau, taken for Time magazine. The black and white image captures a police officer with firearm raised exploring an abandoned home, a room filled with debris. The first impulse is to assume that the photo is a war image or a shot from the slums, but in fact, it's a photo of a home that was repossessed after its owners were unable to pay their debts. Stimulating contradictions and different layers of meaning contributed to its win. Famke van der Valke explains.
The interesting fact of this image is, first of all, it might not be what you expect when you think of the World Press Photo of the Year, and you look at the image and you see an officer, like a typical American scene, it seems, like an officer with a raised gun in a room that's a mess, and you think you recognize it, it might be a drug scene or something like that, and then you have to read the caption because that's where it's explained, and it explains that the people who lived in the house had to leave it because they couldn't pay the mortgage anymore. And the idea that you have an officer with a raised gun, it all got involved in such a situation. And there are many looters in the area. Many houses are empty. It's in Ohio, Cleveland. That he has to do it, that really brings the financial crisis to a level that everybody connects to, because everybody has to pay a mortgage or maybe is having a difficult time now with big companies closing. And it's telling much more than just a banker in despair at Wall Street. This image, which is really a representative for also the things happening in the year 2008.
Also awarded on Thursday at the opening was the acclaimed Swiss photographer Jean Reviard, last year's first prize winner in Contemporary Issues Stories. The photographer has continued working on a series mapping economic migrants attempting to cross into the European Union. This year received the Prague Prize given by the city's mayor. Here's what Jean Reviard had to say at Thursday's press conference about the series of photos he's been taking in Patras, Greece. The photographer adds that he interviews all his subjects closely to learn more about their ambitions and interests. Afterwards, he also said this about the migrants he had mapped.
You know, in iconography of refugees, all times the same. You know, you have all times the refugee on the beach, and he is all time showing like a crazy man, inconscient, unintelligent, and completely crazy to come in Europe because people believe that he don't find anything. And it's not true. These people are paid by their family or their friend in their country for working because they have plan for work. And they are not unconscious. They are very determined. They are very cultivated. They speak very well English. They know internet. They meet some people in Facebook in England or in MSN in England from Afghanistan. And, you know, they are not in conscience. And I try to change the iconography of that.
Many, such as Femke van der Valke, are enthusiastic about the Prague Prize as part of the World Press Photo exhibition here in the Czech capital.
It's a local initiative, so we, of course, we're very happy with it. It's not done in other places, but it's a good example of how to use exhibition to tell even more stories. And that a city is giving its own award to one of the photographers is something, well, that we're very happy with. And I think for the photographer, it's a nice chance to show more of his work than the one image that he won an award with in the contest.
World Press Photo will continue at Prague's Karolinum until October 11th.
And that issue of the arts is all we have time for on Radio Prague today. I'm Rob Cameron. Thanks for listening. Have a nice weekend. Goodbye.